Shout out to Claritin for supporting this episode and providing us with samples.
Anyone else feel like they're talking like this time of year and sneezing and coughing and annoying your family while you're watching TV like I'm sure I do?
Well, yeah, I know that I am because my kids tend to tell me. Luckily for those of us who live with these symptoms of allergies, we can live Claritin Clear with Claritin D. Designed for serious allergy sufferers, Claritin D has two powerful ingredients in just one pill that relieve your allergy symptoms and decongest your nose so you can breathe better. This double action combination of prescription strength allergy medicine and the best decongestant available relieves sneezing, a runny nose, itchy and watery eyes, an itchy nose and throat, and sinus congestion and pressure with ease in as little as a half an hour, by the way. Ready to live life as if you don't have allergies? It's time to live Claritin Clear. Fast and powerful relief is just a quick trip away. Find Claritin D at the pharmacy counter. Ask for Claritin D at your local pharmacy counter. You don't even need a prescription. Go to Claritin.com right now for a discount so you can live Claritin Clear. Use as directed.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, everyone. You are listening to Judging Megan with your host, Megan Judge. I just took a much needed week off of recording. I have recorded consistently to bring you guys episodes weekly, and I haven't taken off since Christmas. So I was like, you know what? I just need like a week to just not record. And a lot of times, to be honest with you, some of these episodes are hard. And the episode that we're going to be sharing today is hard. And I just sometimes need like a break to just not have to talk about hard things. Although selfishly, this stuff helps me and it makes me feel like I have a purpose in life and I'm helping other people. So I love doing it. But I'm happy to be back. I'm especially grateful to my guest today that I'm going to introduce in a minute. But I was going to ask my listeners that I love so much, all of you, if you ever are so inclined, the reviews that you leave me on Apple especially are so appreciated. It helps new listeners find me. So I really appreciate people taking the time to go to Apple and leave me a quick review. If it's not going to be nice, don't do it. I would rather you just not leave me a review. I'm joking. Don't leave me a review unless it's good. And then my special announcement is I am finally going to be posting the full episodes on YouTube. So you are now seeing me in person. Don't have a lot of makeup on, wearing my goggles because I have to. I can't see. You're also seeing my beautiful guest, Kate, who I'm going to introduce. But I'm so grateful to you all. I love doing this. It brings me so much fulfillment in my life. So thank you for my listeners. I appreciate you more than you'll ever know. I am going to introduce my guest, Kate Ruley. Hi, Kate.
Hi.
Oh, I love the heart. Well, now that we're on camera, people can see you, but
thanking you with my heart.
I love that you and I met over social media and you had listened to an episode because you're dear friends with Michelle Leopold, who, if my listeners have not heard that episode, it's a very, very important episode for people to listen to about fentanyl and the crisis of fentanyl and losing her son, Trevor.
Yeah.
And spreading the message about fentanyl awareness is her mission in life. And I'm doing everything I can to also spread that message. And so, Kate, thank you so much for coming on And I'm just so grateful that I now know you and we've been messaging each other. And I know your story is very difficult to tell, but it's needed. And your story is going to touch somebody and hopefully change the path of their own choices in life. That's my hope for this.
Yeah, that's our hope. I just have to share that Michelle gave me this bracelet. And there's two little arrows, but on the inside, it says, keep effing going. I don't know if we can swear on these podcasts or not, but anyway, this.
No, I swear pretty much every episode. I love that. I need one of those too, because my favorite thing to say is keep going. Yeah, keep effing going, everyone.
And she wears this too, of course. So
you both wear it because you're.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're each other's support systems, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you want to share any chance we get about our beautiful sons and, and the hope is that we can save lives, that we can help parents know how to see signs and, and be able to help their young people. Children.
Yeah. So Kate came on today because we're going to share the story of her son. It's a very hard story, I know, Kate, for you to talk about, but it is important for people to listen to. This episode is and could be triggering for somebody. So I want to say that before we share the story. And Kate, I'm just going to ask you about, we're going to start with your own life because you are an activist, a mother, and an artist, which I love. And I want you to just share a little bit about yourself before we kind of go into the harder things, if that's okay.
I grew up in a really dysfunctional family. My parents divorced when I was 4, and she was 20 when she had me, so she really wasn't ready to have a child, and really had a difficult time being a mother. So she wasn't nurturing. She did not have the best parenting. My mom died when she was 53 of leukemia, so she had a short life, and she lived it fast and furious, and it's just really sad because she never really got to live her life authentically and in a healthy way. Of course, it doesn't define me, but it made it really difficult to be a parent because I didn't have that nurturing. I didn't have any role model as far as, a parent is concerned. I didn't have a stable home. So I wanted to make sure that I gave my kids the most loving, healthy family life that they could possibly have. And so I probably went a little overboard. Like, we celebrated every holiday. I mean, the kids would get gifts for like Valentine's Day and St. Patrick's Day. And we would dress up, in red or pink or whatever for Valentine's Day. And everyone would wear green for St. Patty's. And like, we just had just such a great family life. And,
so it sounds like, and not to talk over you, but I'm very sorry. And I didn't expect to hear that you had a hard childhood. And yeah. So I'm sorry. I also lost my father to leukemia. So I understand the disease. He was 46 years old. And so I'm assuming you were pretty young when she passed, if she was 53. She was
20 years older than me. So I was 33 when she died, and I hadn't had any of my children yet. So she never got to meet any of her grandchildren.
Yeah.
But anyway, I know the truth bombs will come out occasionally because I'm a very honest, open person.
No, that's part of why I ask these questions, is because I always want to find out the history. And it does make sense when you come from like a dysfunctional childhood, or there's issues, or like, alcoholism or abuse or anything like that, where sometimes parents overcompensate when they become parents because they just want the opposite for their children than they had, right?
You know, I'm really glad I did. And, you know, lately, part of my healing has been watching home videos. And something that I do as an artistic, visual, creative person is I do photography and a lot of video. And so I'm sort of like the historian of our family. So I'm always taking pictures and recording every event, you know, not just for my family, but also for my siblings, families, and friends. And so I have a lot of videos, family home videos, which I've been watching. And so that's part of my healing is to watch these videos, to see Warren when he was a baby. I just watched the birth video of my twins with my husband the other night and wept watching them. I mean, the whole thing, like it was a cesarean and them being pulled out of yeah. my body and everything. And it's so healing and beautiful to go back and relive those moments. And it's just, it's so healing. So I've been doing that. And so
well, I'll say this to you, that something that I think, and for my listeners, the best thing that you can do in life, and somebody told me this once, nobody's going to care. Like I'm one of those people, I only like to get my picture taken if I look a certain way, or yeah. I don't like when people just come up and I'm in like a weird conversation with a double chin. Like, I'm like, don't take my picture. But someday you realize that the pictures and the videos, you hold on to those for dear life. Like there is a video of my dad and a tape or something, and that's really all I have left. And my mom recently came on the podcast to share. I thought to myself, and I said to her on this one day, it makes me tear up to think about this, how lucky I am that I'll have that.
Yeah. It's so true. My dad was
I didn't think I'd start crying. Let's keep going.
I cry at like commercials.
So do I. I'm the same way. Yeah.
An MCI commercial or whatever. It was that telephone one. You reach out and touch someone. And oh my God. And I would cry at that.
Oh, or like diaper commercials. There's those commercials where like, you know, like they're having like the mother and like the baby and like the baby saying, like, I'll just cry over anything, but it's not when I'm recording my podcast and I cry all the time. It's not always great for my audience, probably.
I didn't wear any mask on the bottom today, but I was just going to say my father passed away a couple years ago. He had stage 4 lung cancer. And sadly, well, the whole thing was just really tragic, the timing and everything, because he was diagnosed 2 months after my son died by suicide. And so I had to deal with my father's slow demise. Well,
passing at the same time.
Within a year to the date, pretty much, that he was diagnosed. So I lost my son in 2019. And then during COVID, I lost my father to cancer. So that was, you know, double.
Okay. I am so sorry. And now it makes sense to me though, that you and Michelle are tight because you both lost your sons around the same time, correct?
Exactly. Yeah. And I'll talk about that too. But I just want to say that my dad was in one of these home videos and he was, I would ask him questions intentionally, like about his past, because I want those family stories, right? Like you're talking about your dad and just seeing that video of him and that you can really treasure that. And so I would interview him and ask him questions about his childhood. And it was just so great having that, such a treasure. So I just wanted to add that to just watch that. So it was wonderful.
Well, I love that. And I love that, we're going to get into the story, but you know, the best thing that you can do, people grieve in all different kinds of ways. And I just had an episode where we talked about grieving with the Good Morning podcast, the girls from that podcast. And one of them had lost her mother to suicide. Oh, and,
yeah, I'm going to watch that.
Yeah. We talk a lot. Yeah. We talk a lot about grieving and how we all grieve in different ways. And grieving for me, because you can already tell I just started crying, is a lifelong process. And to normalize grieving of like your child, your dad, for me, my best friend, my sister, is it's okay because you're going to spend your life grieving these people. You're never physically going to see them again. So for people to just say, oh, it's been this period of time, well, I don't agree with that at all, because I, for the rest of my life, will be grieving my loved ones that I cherished and loved. So I just wanted to say that because I think that's so important to point out.
I really agree with you. And I've been hearing a lot about how, like, your grief is a measure of your love, you know, like, I mean, not that, like,
I just posted that. I literally just posted that.
Okay. That's where I saw it.
I did. I posted that.
Yeah.
That must be a sign. I posted that the day before yesterday. I'll send it to you.
Because
that is so crazy.
Our love is so deep. And, you know, and not that if we're not openly crying and feeling heartbroken all the time, that our love wasn't as deep. But grief is love being expressed. And whatever you posted was beautiful. Yes. So that's what I'm referring to. Yeah. You know, we forgot to.
Oh, okay. I'm like,
did you light your candle?
I was like, Kate, are you? No, I have my candle. For the listeners that can't see, I was telling Kate before we started that every episode I light a candle. It's my little ritual that I do before I start recording. And it brings me like peace and happiness. And she was saying the same thing. It kind of like makes you feel like maybe our loved ones are with us right now. I don't know.
Just lit mine. And this says, in memory of a life so beautifully lived and a heart so deeply loved. So that's for my boy and for all those that we've lost to suicide.
I love that. So let's get into the story. And I know this is difficult. I've openly talked to you through social media and my audience about my own period of time in my own life where I didn't want to live. I was having suicidal ideations and I struggled with it for a long time, like a full 8 months of my life. And I couldn't get it out of my head. And I will tell you this, I'm not crazy. It was a situational depression that had boiled up from being diagnosed with complex PTSD stemming from my childhood.
Mm.
And I really saw no other way out. And the thing is that people need to understand, because I think I've done a lot of research and reading on this, is when you are suicidal, you're almost like made the villain, you know, that you're so selfish, or if you were to take your, or did somebody did take their own life, then everybody goes when they pass, oh, you're so selfish. You're so this, you're so, they were so that. It's so unfair.
Yeah.
Because the amount of pain that somebody is in that period is like nothing I can ever explain to somebody else that can understand unless they were in it. So I just want to say that. And I would like for you, if you're okay, to share the story.
Yeah. Thank you so much for sharing that. It's really important for people to understand. You're in so much pain when you're in that place, like you expressed so well. You don't think rationally. You're not thinking about how things would affect other people. And especially as a 17-year-old boy, you know, which my son, when he died, he was just over 17. He was a high school senior. And he was an extreme introvert. So he wasn't someone, and I'm probably an extreme extrovert. So our personalities are, you know, we're really different. The way we connected with others, and like as an extrovert, and I think you're probably an extrovert too, we need people to fill us. And to be around people yeah. energizes us, whereas an introvert needs their time alone to recharge. And so it was really hard for me to really understand him and his needs, and he didn't understand me. It was hard to communicate to begin with, because we were both opposite in our, in that respect. As a child, though, interestingly enough, he seemed to be extroverted, and he was really goofy and just joyful, bouncy. He loved jumping and running and typical boy, antics. And one of his favorite things to do was to do running flips. And he was constantly doing running flips. I had a slip and slide in the backyard and he's running flips. Yeah. And it was just amazing how he could just do them anywhere, even like in his bedroom. One day I heard this thumping noise and I was like, what on earth is that? So I go upstairs, I knock on his door, and I was like, what's going on in there, Warren? And he goes, oh, I'm practicing my flips. So that's who he was, and cracking jokes and goofy and just so different than the person he became. And one of his friends said that when he started high school, his freshman year, he changed and he became very withdrawn. More and more so over the years until his senior year, where he was just really shut down. But it was a slow process. And so it was gradual. So, it wasn't like an obvious sign that we saw. So freshman year, he just stopped being goofy. He was more serious, but you could attribute that to him wanting to do well in school and him taking school seriously, because he was. And he was really good grades. And, he was on the tennis team and, outwardly he was, really high functioning, and which a lot of these kids are. And that's another reason why it's really hard to realize that they're in trouble, because outwardly they are doing all the things that would make you think that they're okay, that they're thriving.
Mm-hmm.
Same, right? Because mm-hmm. you're like a really ambitious woman, you were doing all these things when you were suffering, smiling, being, no one probably knew what was going on inside of you until you started talking.
Until I started talking.
And then you
until
did.
I started talking. Yeah.
And you did. But and before, then I did.
Yeah.
No one would have known, right? Because you were outwardly living your life, weren't you? Like functioning.
Well, I would hide. I still do. I hide behind humor.
A lot.
Wanted to be the funny. Yeah.
Like Robin Williams.
Tell me what. Robin Williams is a perfect example. I'm like a female Robin Williams. but let me. I'm not as funny as Robin Williams, and I've never been in any movies. But let me ask you. What was there something that happened his freshman year of high school? Like, was he experimenting with pot, or was he like going to parties and drinking alcohol? Was it anything related to that? I had to ask that.
No, nothing. No. You would assume, right? You would assume that maybe he got involved in those kind of things. He never did. He never did drugs. He wouldn't even take like melatonin to help him sleep in the beginning. He was really against that, any kind of drugs, even homeopathic. He just didn't want to take anything, because Warren's thing was he wanted to fix himself. He was very stubborn. He wanted to do everything on his own. He didn't want any help. And that was part of the reason why, he died by suicide, was because he did not ask for help and he thought he could fix himself. So no drugs, no alcohol. He didn't even have a girlfriend. Like he's still a virgin when he died. He still had braces on when he died. It's just so heartbreaking, because he did not get to live his life, And part of me wishes that, maybe he would have done some experimenting, that he would have had some life, experiences, which I had a ton, by the time I was his age. I did so much, really too much, way too much. But it just breaks my
heart. Me too. Yeah.
It breaks my heart that he didn't get.
Yeah. He was a baby. Let me ask you, was he dealing with like bullying at school or
no.
like were kids meet nothing like that? Okay. Okay. Cause I'm always,
I know it's crazy. So Warren's case is pretty unique, I think. And I think it mostly has to do with addiction to video games and social isolation, he had social anxiety, pretty severe. And, he got addicted to video games pretty early on and we knew it was a problem. Okay. We used to lock up his laptop and all his devices in a safe to keep him off of them because he would be on them like 24/7 if he had his choice, you know. But it was kind of too late. Like he was already so addicted that we couldn't, you know, and it's a drug because it stimulates the dopamine, right? So he had that drug of the dopamine blasts, the brain getting those dopamine blasts when he played video games. So there was that. There was an addiction. It wasn't drugs, but it was to that dopamine blast. He even wrote
They've also done studies, and I'm sorry if I'm talking over you. I'm hoping the connection's okay. They've done studies on screen time in boys specifically. I'm sure you've seen some of these studies and what it does to young boys' brains. And then I talk about this a lot, that our brains as human beings are not fully developed till they're 25. So video games are really harmful. They're finding in these studies that they're doing specifically for boys.
I'm really glad that you mentioned that you brought that up because I don't think there's enough studies being done. And I think that is like a precursor to drug addiction. They start out with mm-hmm. this addiction to, the video games, and then they're used to getting those dopamine blasts mm-hmm. and then they start searching for another, stronger high. You know, that's how it is with the marijuana that leads to Xanax or whatever. So I feel like a lot mm-hmm. of it starts with video games, and that addiction leads to other addictions, which I don't think they've done a lot of studies around. But
I need to find the one that I sent you. But I did do an episode with Dr. Tracy Bennett, and she kind of like touches on that and screen time in general. But just mm-hmm. to point that out, how that's something that they're finding and something for parents to be aware of. And I know most parents, like you're either one extreme or the other. And it's, I'm a mom. I know that my kids are on screens all the time. I have girls, but mm-hmm. it's hard as a parent because all you want to do at the end of the day is like unwind, right? But it's really hard to control how much your kids are on screens. There's like a fine line, which I know you understand. Yeah.
Well, there's like the megaverse, which is happening, which is like, and I find myself getting sucked into it too. I'm on Instagram all the time. It's like vicariously through other people who are traveling the world, who are, like I watch your podcasts and you can spend half your day literally quite easily actually in that metaverse or whatever they're calling it. Metaverse, is that it? You know what I'm talking about?
It's called Meta now. Yeah, it's Meta or whatever. Facebook's Meta now, but yeah. It's just, not to change the subject, but it's
Go ahead.
It's very, very addicting. Screen time in general for me too. Like I know, when I went through my friend breakup, I had to delete. I had to block a lot of people because for me it was very, very triggering if I saw like photos of me not being invited to something I think people were like, I had to do that for my own mental health because that was something I was really struggling with.
Yeah.
But put a device in a young child's hands or a video game like we're talking about, and it's like they just don't have the ability, if we don't even have the ability as adults with fully formed brains mm-hmm. then kids obviously don't, right?
Right.
Okay, so let's kind of talk about specifically what happened, like when he got to his senior year, was there like a day, and I'm saying this too, because this is to educate parents, especially. I have a lot of parents that listen to this. I know that I have a 12-year-old daughter that I worry about, you know, I have her in therapy. I worry about, you know, depression runs in my family. It's you know, something that I'm very, very well aware of, but I just want to be prepared. So tell me about that day. Tell me about like what was going on at that specific time. Were there any warning signs? Was there anything that you noticed or had any kind of feeling that something was happening?
So looking back in retrospect, you can figure out the signs. At the time, we just noticed he had been irritable. He was an insomniac. He wasn't sleeping for a long period of time. And that is definitely something that can trigger mental health issues. As you probably know, you know, insomnia can really, you know, they use it as a form of torture for a reason, you know, like keeping someone awake with them. So that was part of it. But he was irritable. He was always tired and, you know, could be typical teenage behavior. You know, he's a boy, you know, kind of like, you know, not wanting to have conversations and kind of avoiding questions, just not wanting. He'd say, one time he said to me, "Mom, why do you ask me so many questions?" And I was like, "Because I care about you, because I'm interested in your life." You know, we're driving in the car. That's when he was my captive audience. But so that's how he was, you know. Yeah. He didn't seem to be his happy, you know, joy, you know, the goofy self anymore, hardly at all. Very, very little, like the cats and you know, maybe our dog. We have a lot of pets. Would make him laugh. He would giggle and he'd play with them. And that was about the only time I saw him really being happy. But, you know, we attributed his seriousness and all of that to, you know, him wanting to really do well in school, which he was. So he was getting the best grades of his life. He was really applying himself. So basically that's how he was showing up in the world at that time. And there was, I would say about a week, maybe 2 weeks before he died, before he chose to leave us, he had this sense of urgency about wanting to get things done. Okay. He never gave things away, never talked about, you know, how we'd be better off without him or how, you know, none of that. Never talked that way. You know, he didn't talk much at all. I never saw him cry. Mm-hmm. He did not seem depressed to me. And, you know, and I've had depression. My depression is, it manifests really differently, you know? So I didn't recognize his depression because it just was really different than my own and what I'm used to seeing. He wanted to get things done. Like he was like, "Mom, when are we going to go and get my acne medicine? Like, you know, I've been asking you, like, let's do that. When can we do that?" And he'd have post notes that he'd put around for me to remind me. And he was really annoyed that I wasn't like on it, you know? And it was like, whoa, you know, like we'll get it done, you know? And then he wanted to get his driver's license, and he was kind of, you know, behind because, you know, he was already 17. He wanted to get that. And anyway, so it was a sense of urgency. And then all of a sudden, I think the week before, he was like, "No, it doesn't matter. We'll do it next week. I'm too tired. You know, it's not a big deal anymore," right? He just all of a sudden switched from this sense of urgency to like, "That's okay. Let's do it next week. I'm too tired." So I thought, oh, well, he's relaxing. He's not, you know, as stressed out, you know. But I think he'd already made up his mind about what he was going to do. He'd already made up his mind.
Shout out to Claritin for supporting this episode and providing us with samples.
Anyone else feel like they're talking like this time of year and sneezing and coughing and annoying your family while you're watching TV like I'm sure I do?
Well, yeah, I know that I am because my kids tend to tell me. Luckily for those of us who live with these symptoms of allergies, we can live Claritin Clear with Claritin D. Designed for serious allergy sufferers, Claritin D has two powerful ingredients in just one pill that relieve your allergy symptoms and decongest your nose so you can breathe better. This double action combination of prescription strength allergy medicine and the best decongestant available relieves sneezing, a runny nose, itchy and watery eyes, an itchy nose and throat, and sinus congestion and pressure with ease in as little as a half an hour, by the way. Ready to live life as if you don't have allergies? It's time to live Claritin Clear. Fast and powerful relief is just a quick trip away. Find Claritin D at the pharmacy counter. Ask for Claritin D at your local pharmacy counter. You don't even need a prescription. Go to Claritin.com right now for a discount so you can live Claritin Clear. Use as directed.
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today, we discuss technical diagramming with systems architect Maya. Let's go. First question. You've spent 10 hours slogging over a sequence diagram that should have taken 5. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board. And if I'm being honest, Miro would probably cut that time down by half. You know, with its AI tools and ready-to-go templates.
Next, your diagrams become so bulky, it's more complex than the solar system. But all it takes is a few clicks and...
It's Miro. I've used those technical shape packs way too many times, and stuff is just digestible on its infinite online canvas.
Now, the final question. Everyone's brought in, but you have to make all these tasks all the way over in Jira. But wait, it's done. Is it...
Miro. Easy with its two-way Jira sync. Easy to plot dependencies. Everyone always knows what's up.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people creating technical diagrams without workflow glitches. Get your first 3 boards for free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.
Maybe he was like fighting the sense of urgency, and this is maybe me analyzing it, but was him fighting the decision.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I said, he wanted to fix himself. You figured if he got everything right, you know, like if he got, you know, like we all do, like once I get my driver's license, once I do this, once I do that, you know, once I get accepted into that college, everything's going to be better, you know? And something happened with the school, which I think was also a trigger for him that really set him off, was that, and this is really upsetting to me because he was filling out his applications for the college, applications. And he was writing down or filling in the different classes that he had taken to make sure he had all his requirements. And it turned out that the class that he had taken, which was product design, didn't cover his art requirement. So he couldn't apply to the colleges. He couldn't graduate, basically. Oh. Found this out like right before graduation, right before school got out, and like there was no time to make this class up. And so I'm sure he had a lot of stress about that. I know I did. And so I called his counselor and I said, he can't apply to colleges. He can't graduate. He doesn't have his art requirement. And she said, oh, all he needs to do is take an art class over the summer at the college, you know. So he ended up taking a medieval art class at the College of Marin, which was like a lecture class. Can you imagine a 17-year-old boy sitting through a medieval art lecture? A boy who has no interest in art whatsoever. He didn't want to do it, right?
Yeah.
And he would make up excuses for us to pick him up. Like he'd say the class was canceled. He didn't want to do it. And I think, you know, also at that point, he'd already decided he wasn't going to college, you know, that he was going to end his life. So I think he had planned it maybe a couple weeks. He had made his decision at that point. It's not working out. I can't go to college. You know, like, it's just too hard. It's just too much. And he opted out. That's what it's like. It's like they opt out. It's like, this isn't working out.
Yeah.
Nothing's going right. I can't get a girlfriend. Can't graduate from high school because I don't have my art requirement. I can't get into the colleges that I want. You know, so many things are going against him, and he worked so hard. He worked really hard. He tried so hard up until the very end, you know. But that's the thing, you know, it's like, it gets better and you can fix things. And that's the thing about young people, like you said, you know, like their brains and prefrontal cortex isn't fully developed. So they don't know that it's not going to always be this way, that there's actually a future that can be better, because they don't have a concept of the future. They don't understand better, you know? And so that would be my message, like, to, you know, anyone out there who's just so frustrated, who just feels like nothing's going right for them. You know, it does get better. It can all change tomorrow. Everything can completely change, you know, and you know this, right?
Yeah. I mean, like, but that's the thing. It's like, life is not easy, but you just, you know, when you are in that place, and it's different for everybody that's suicidal or feels those feelings, everybody has a different story, but it's like, when you have just given up and you're hopeless, you know, I tell the story of, and I've told it on the podcast before, of sitting on the beach, you know, and looking at all I ever wanted was to be a mom. And I wanted two little girls specifically. And I was looking out to the ocean and I saw my girls playing, and I thought in my head, like, this is my dream. And I just didn't care anymore. And like, that's when I was like, okay. But that's also because I was an adult. So I had the ability to go, this is bad. I need to, like, really figure this out. For me, I went on medication because I had to. Mm-hmm. It was like my last stop. You know, it was like, either this is it or it's not. And I'm not saying, by the way, that I don't still struggle. We all do as people. You've said yourself, like, you have depression, but it shows up in a different way. My depression shows up in a different way than your depression does. Warren's depression showed up in a different way than both of ours. And it's like, you know, none of this is obviously your fault as a parent, which I can't imagine, like, what it would be like to struggle with the guilt and all the things that came afterwards. But it is just something I wanted to point out. It's like something that you can't control. It's like this dark, dark demon almost that's telling you that you don't want to be here. That's the best way I can kind of describe it for myself. You know, no, and it took over, and it sounds like that was him.
Yeah, that you know, people will say there was a voice. You know, and one of my friends, her son jumped off the Golden Gate Bridge a year ago in August. And he had a psychotic break from high potency THC. And he had a voice that was telling him that he needed to go and do that, that he needed to jump off the Golden Gate Bridge, and just was relentless, you know. And, you know, the voices, you hear that, you know, that it's almost like these demonic voices that are telling, especially young people that are, you know, taking mind altering drugs, you know, and they also say that schizophrenia can be, you know, a result of the high potency THC. So, you know, then you have this psychotic break, and pretty soon, you know, all you hear is voices in your head, and that's the rest of your life, right? So that's why it's so important that we talk about, you know, the risks of drugs, because already we've got mental health issues. We've got these voices, just normal, right? Just every day, no drugs in us at all. And then you add those drugs on top of it and just imagine how.
Well, also just like situational life, like if you're already struggling, like Warren was struggling, and then to be told, like when he works so hard, that he wasn't going to be able to apply to colleges. It's like piece by piece. It's like building a ladder almost, you know, like I'm assuming, and this is me being assumptive, but like, he probably was like, this is the next step. Then I'm going to do this next step. And to have the ladder be pulled, a lot, most people can deal with the ladder being pulled, but some people just can't. They don't have the ability. And if you're already struggling, it's like a perfect storm. It's a perfect storm, you know?
Yeah, yes, absolutely. That's a really good way to put it. It was a perfect storm for him. It was like this really slow, like, or almost like a sneaker wave that just came up, you know, and just took him out. Just one thing after another going wrong. And then he just, you know, I think that happens with a lot of people who die by suicide. It's just like, you know, nothing's going right. So many things are going wrong. And, you know, people of all ages are dying by suicide. And even people who have coping skills, right, who dealt with depression all their lives, and they're just they're giving up. You know, you look at the world today and everything that's going on in our world, and that can be really hopeless, right? You think about the gun violence, you think about, you know, the politicians, corrupt politicians, and the environment, global warming, on and on, right? And that can make you hopeless. Even if you're someone who is hopeful, who has a positive worldview, that can even make someone who doesn't even have depression feel hopeless sometimes. So it's a lot.
Yeah, 100%. So when Warren finally like made the choice, like we kind of talked about that day, like what was that day? What happened that day? I mean, you don't have to go into details.
So that day, so I guess I've been avoiding that. This is hard to talk about because I found him Friday, February 8th, 2019. And I had to bring him to school, and he wasn't ready. Usually he would be the one to like poke me awake, make sure that I was going to get up in time and everything. And his door was closed. I knocked on his door. He didn't answer his door. And I opened the door and I found him. And he'd hung himself. And he was in his bathroom and started yelling, "Help me, help me, someone help me." And
I know that this is so hard to talk about, and I just honestly I feel speechless because I really can't imagine like that what that was like and the pain. And I'm speechless. I don't know what to say.
It's a hard thing to live through. Like,
it's
really hard.
Yeah. Let me ask you that. Yeah. How did you, cause you already had your own trauma in life and stuff you'd already dealt with. What did you do? Like, how did you deal with this? And I know like, it's like step by step. I talk about that a lot, dealing with trauma, specifically like the loss of a child is the worst thing that anybody can ever go through. And then that the loss of a child by the child taking their own life is unbearable. Mm-hmm. How did you go on?
Yeah. And then finding them. I had, you know, his 17-year-old sister who was having this experience with me, you know, and I just wanted to like mama bear, like I need to protect my family. and make us all safe. Mm-hmm. And I needed to get out of the house. So once everything was done, the coroner came and they took his body away, I was like, we need to leave. We still live in the same house, which can be very hard, but I have insisted on staying here, which a lot of people don't really understand. Even other moms who've lost their children, they need to get out right away. They need to move. And anyway, we can get into that some other time, but I did something. So I checked us into a hotel and we'd stay there for 4 days until we all stabilized and we were treated for shock. The next day I checked into the ER, which is probably the best thing that I've ever done in my life. And I don't even know what made me think of doing it, but I knew we were in shock, you know. And I mean, my daughter and I could have had major PTSD from that experience. And so I thought, we're in shock. We need to be treated. We need to go to the ER. And so I just had my whole family go. My two daughters, my husband, and myself. And we were there pretty much all day. And it was amazing how they took care of us. And I don't even think people know that you can go. Like, if you've been, even if you're not injured, like physically injured, you're dealing with shock and trauma. And, you know, And so they took really good care of us. They gave us warm blankets. They gave us sedatives. They gave us, something to help us sleep, you know, and then a therapist came to talk to us. We had to wait a while for him to come, but he spoke to each one of us individually, and he's a trauma specialist. And then he became my husband. And then he talked to us as a family, and he became my husband's therapist, and he's now my therapist, and he's been in our lives ever since. But I mean, he's an amazing man, and he's just been such a blessing to us. So that was a real gift to be able to have that experience. And because we did that and because we got help right away and addressed our PTSD, or the shock of that experience, we didn't have lasting effects. So I don't have flashbacks. I did EMDR. I don't have flashbacks. I can do my laundry, which is the laundry room is right next to his bedroom. Right next to his bathroom where I found him. Sometimes I'll think about it. Like, he just died. Like, it not just died. It's been 3 years, but he died in that room right next to me. And I could kind of go back to that day, but somehow I'm able to like compartmentalize it. You know, I don't go in his room a lot. I want to set it up as like a shrine or something really beautiful, you know, like a living memorial to him. But yeah, so that was the very best thing that I think I've ever done. And it really, really helped us heal.
I want to interrupt you for a second and point out that that's huge. And the fact that you thought of doing that is huge. And that is a reminder to my audience. God forbid anybody ever finds themselves in that place. But it just is a reminder that how important it is that that's known, that that's an option, because people, yeah. I mean, the suicide rates are the highest they've ever been in the history of our country right now, which is terrifying. They're the highest they've ever been. And I think the latest statistic I saw was, I think they might even be triple what they were from 5 years ago. I might be wrong.
Age group? Are you talking about across all demographics, or?
No, yeah. I'm talking about specifically like teenagers.
Teenagers, yeah. It's a second leading cause within the 10 to 24 year old demographic. Second leading cause of death for 10.
And the first leading cause of death is guns, by the way, for that age group, which we can touch on at the end. I'm always like, part of why I do this, by the way, Kate, is to point out like, it's like normalizing mental health, normalizing grieving, normalizing all of these things, sharing these, like your horrific story, but showing my audience and my listeners that if you can go on and we can go on and we can meet, like you and I can meet over social media because of the fabulous Michelle, And these people come into our lives. And if we were just more open, you know what I'm saying? Like maybe these things wouldn't, maybe we can help each other. I don't know. I'm so Pollyanna about things sometimes, but I just had to say.
I mean, we are helping each other, you know, like Michelle and Tori Kropp and Marianne Crelo. I'm not pronouncing her name right. Sorry, Marianne. We're the angel moms that support each other. We have our own little group, you know, and we've also helped others in the county. People will call us when their friend has lost a child or a coworker or someone, and they'll call us and they'll say, can you talk to my friend? They need support. And so we are helping each other. We're supporting each other. And that's how we get through it. You know, we hold each other up. Sometimes, you know, one of us can barely walk anymore. We're just like going through a really rough time. And there's been times when other moms have been suicidal. And one mom attributes her support, the support she received from Michelle and I, to her even being alive today. So when you hear things like that, you know that you're making a difference. And that's really all that matters.
And that it gives you purpose, and that you're living in Warren's memory.
Yes.
You know, like this is like, or in Michelle's case, Trevor, you know, like, and then I was going to say the fact that this happened right before COVID.
Yeah.
The timing couldn't have been worse. Right.
Right. Yeah. It was crazy.
I mean,
just one thing after another.
And then like losing your dad.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
it just one thing after another. Go ahead. Go ahead. Sorry.
No, I just, before we end, because I noticed we only got 5 minutes, I did want to touch on the Marin County strategic plan and the Marin County Suicide Prevention Collaborative. I just wanted to talk about that.
Please do, because and Marin is in, we're in California, so I'm in Los Angeles, and then you're in the San Francisco area. But I'm assuming when you talk about this that there's support all over the country, and if there's not, then shame on all the things that are happening all over the country, because we need it, especially now. So why don't you talk about that?
Yeah. So the reason why it's so important to talk about this is because, well, it's working for one thing. It's a huge effort that has been undertaken since my son died. All these things have happened. So that's one of the things I wanted to point out, was just that my son, I told you he died February of 2019. In the summer of 2019, the Behavioral Health and Human Services department in the county, they started a suicide prevention strategic planning committee. And so they had professionals from the medical fields, behavioral health, social services, education, different people from different demographics and underserved people throughout the county that came together and met together to write a strategic plan to address suicide in Marin County. And I was also part of the planning committee, so they had suicide loss survivors as well. And we would sit, and I would sit in a circle with a doctor, a pediatrician, or like the Kelly Finley from NAMI, the executive director. And we would talk about how we saw suicide prevention being, prevented, like my experiences and how we wanted to see this strategic plan written and just giving our input. And so I shared my lived experience and that kind of thing. So we worked on that. Once the strategic plan, I just lost my notes, was implemented, then, so, and it was a comprehensive plan that included practices that were proven to reduce suicide and suicide attempts. So it was, what is the word they use? Evidence-based. I'm trying to remember the terminology. Evidence.
Yeah.
And it really is an amazing plan. And I can send you the Behavioral Health and Health and Human Services department has a website that, and it has a whole section on suicide prevention where you can actually read the plan, which is amazing. And the reason why it's important to share it is because it's duplicatable, you know, and it's working in our county, and other counties can do this, you know, across the country. So
is this the first county and place in the country to do this?
I don't think it's the first that's done it. It's been done. Okay. I believe this is a model that was shared from I think it was the mayor in Palo Alto who got this going, because at Gunn High School had a really high suicide rate. I don't know if you heard about it. There was a movie documentary done about it, Gunn High School. And so a woman named Monica Hooley was in touch with him and suggested a strategic plan for our county. She is a suicide loss survivor mom. And she was the mother of Gabriel Hooley, who was one of the three boys who died in 2017 that led to the strategic plan being written in the first place. And those boys died within a two-week period of each other. They were all high school senior boys. And so that's how it all started. And then my son died 17 months after these boys died. So you had the cluster, and then my son died. So, you know, there is definitely something to be said about the clusters and how it plants a seed. It does happen. I believe it happened. Yeah. And even though it was 17 months later, I do believe it was directly related to his death. So then we had the strategic plan, announced. The supervisors, the Marin County Board of Supervisors, were, you know, part of this from the beginning. And so it was approved, and they, you know, they gave it their blessing, sort of, you know, the whole formal, they have the, you know, the, what do they call it, proclamation. And it was really exciting. That all started I believe it was in February of 2020, which was a year after my son died. We started the Marin County Suicide Prevention Collaborative, which is huge. And there's like,
I mean, it's like enormous. And it also shows
incredible,
like your work and everything that you're doing, like how proud Warren would be, I'm sure. And he's looking over you, you know, you touched on staying in the house, and the laundry room. And by the way, I'm a huge fan of EMDR. I think it's really important for people that have gone through some sort of trauma, taking a memory specifically, and you basically, by doing EMDR, are able to kind of make that memory not what it was, right? You use vibrating tool in each hand. I've done it.
Yep.
It's crazy because it really works. So you take a memory that's like traumatic, and then you do this like zapping thing with your hands, and you're like, oh my God. And then the memory. So it makes sense to me that you are able to like successfully use EMDR, and then staying in the house, I think, is a beautiful thing. In my opinion, because it's like you're surrounded by happy memories and not letting that one memory take away all of the years that you had in your home. And then I'm a huge believer in like spirit, and I'm very spiritual, and knowing that my angels are always with me, and my dad and my sister and Julie, my best friend. So I think that's a beautiful thing.
Angels. I love this one because it looks like an angel. Do you see his angel wings?
Yeah.
The water?
Yes.
They make feelings. You see that?
Yes, I love it. I love it.
So I have this.
Let me just ask you in closing, because I know this is a very, for my audience, the listeners that are listening to this, this is a really hard, triggering episode. Kate, you're amazing that you came on and you shared this and that you're doing something, like living your life. Like I know some people hate it when you say, oh, everything happens for a reason. I mean, the worst things happen. Oh, so handsome. I wish everyone, in case you want to see some of these pictures that Kate's showing me right now, go to YouTube. Judging Megan podcast is my channel. I'm starting doing things on camera, but you can see some of these photos. But I wanted to ask you what your sign is that you know that warrants. Do you have a sign?
Well, yeah. I mean, I get hearts all the time. I see them in the crazy all the time. Yeah. And not just rocks. I mean, like, you know, like a little foam on my coffee. I take pictures. I've collected them. So I have a lot of hearts in different, you know, forms. They come to me always. And also feathers, lots and lots of feathers. The
feathers are
huge. Yeah. Feathers. I have a lot of amazing stories about signs. And Michelle and I are constantly sending pictures to each other and texting each other. Yeah. And like one time we were at lunch and a van drove by and it said Trevor on it. And she's like, oh, Trevor shot, you know, it's just like happens.
No, it's crazy to me because these, like, listen to these signs, like watch out for these signs. Mine I talk about all the time is the monarch butterfly. But Michelle, my audience listeners that haven't listened to the episode. So Michelle's sign, she lost her son Trevor to the fentanyl overdose in 2019 also, but she sees hearts on rocks, like rocks in the shape of a heart. And I told her I was doing laundry right after I recorded with her. I don't know if you listened to me. I did an Instagram live with her. And I found, it was so weird. I found a heart-shaped rock in my dryer. So I'm like, oh my gosh. Like, if you don't believe in signs, isn't that a crazy story? Yeah,
it is.
Yeah.
That they want us to know their spirits live on, and they are just constantly sending us signs. You can't deny them.
And that you'll see. I mean, I believe I'm going to see them again. Like, I live for that. I live for the fact that I'm like, I'm going to, like, Dad, you better be like sitting there waiting for me with a martini or a buttery Chardonnay. My dad liked to gin and tonic.
Oh,
I just want to tell you, keep doing your work, Kate.
Yeah,
keep doing your work. Keep looking out for the feathers and the hearts. Those are all signs. And honestly, I am just honored to know you. I'm grateful that you shared your story of Warren. And I hope that people understand like what an inspirational person you are. And in closing, I say this because my dad used to say it all the time. And so I've chosen to live my life to try to emulate my dad. I'm not perfect. Believe me, I think I cussed somebody out yesterday at a light, but I will say this, be happy by making other people happy. Thank you, Kate.
Yes. Amen. Thank you so much.